Page, and you are listening to The Impact Exchange, a podcast where we discuss the intersection of corporate social responsibility and all things retail. On this episode of The Impact Exchange, we have a unique episode. We are going to be listening in on a webinar that was hosted by Shopping Gives and Recurate, where we discussed how Shopify stores and beyond can embrace sustainability. In this event, we learned how e-commerce merchants on and off Shopify can lead with sustainability and their social impact efforts. With COVID top of mind and holiday quickly approaching, we align on the four key areas of impact that we consistently talk about here at Shopping Gives: your team, community, customer, and product. And we're going to learn and discuss with four industry leaders the benefits and lessons around building a sustainable practice throughout their entire business and aligning with their customers' values. On this episode, we have Helen DeVoice from The Extra Smile. We have Darby Scott, founder of Darby Scott, and Katie Boothby Kung, senior manager of social impact at Shopify, with host Adam Siegel, CEO of Recurate. Enjoy listening in on this unique episode of The Impact Exchange of a pre-recorded webinar.
Well, hi, everyone, and thank you so much for joining our webinar on how Shopify stores can embrace sustainability. We're so excited to have all of you, the attendees here, as well as three incredible panelists who I'll introduce in just a minute. We were blown away by the interest in this Shopify meetup, and so we'll try to do a few fun things along the way to keep this active and keep you engaged throughout our time together. And the first thing I'd like to do, even before introductions, is to start with a fun poll. So the question, which you should see on your screen right now, is if you could choose one person to quarantine with, who would it be? Would it be Kylie Jenner, Elton John? Wow, people are already going. Ronaldo, J.K. Rowling, Taylor Swift, or Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Oh, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is popping up into the lead. 10, over 50, almost 50%. All right, I'm going to give it 5 more seconds. Quickly make your decision now. Who would you want to quarantine with? All right, now I'm going to share. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg wins by the mile. Second to that is J.K. Rowling. All right, we have a very intellectual crowd here today. This is exciting. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us. I'm Adam Siegel. I'm with Recurate. I'll introduce Recurate in a minute. But before that, I wanted to thank you all for your help with offsetting carbon, because for all of you that are actually in attendance today, we're going to offset half a ton of carbon emissions on your behalf. So Recurate is a new Shopify app. We're unlisted because we're currently being going through beta testing, but we enable used product sales directly on your Shopify store. And the reason why that's important is because buying used is the most sustainable way to shop. And we're here in partnership with Shopping Gives, and I'll turn it over to Ronnie Sage to introduce Shopping Gives.
Thank you so much, Adam, and thanks for putting this together with us. My name is Ronnie Stage, and I'm the CEO at Shopping Gives. Shopping Gives is a social impact commerce platform. We are a Shopify app as well. We have changed commerce, and we do end-to-end donations, and we're look at social impact as a growth strategy, enabling bottom line with giving back, aligning customers' values with each individual purchase, enabling turnkey giving. So we are very excited to be part of this, and ready for our next poll question before we jump into things, Adam.
Right.
So the next question we have is, how are you currently prioritizing social impact in your business today? 1 is extremely important, and 5 is not important. I'm on the edge of my seat because I can't see the poll responses until they're done.
All right, I'm going to give you all 5 more seconds. Ronnie, I think you're going to be excited with the results here. Share results.
Solid. There you go. Love it. That's great to see. So 65%, extremely important. Well, we hope that we take the 4s and the 3s and we bring you up to at least a 2 today. And back to you, Adam, for our last question, I believe.
Oh, well, I'll do that in just a minute. But before that, okay. we wanted to give a few more benefits to the folks that are joining us today. So for Recurate, we're offering 3 free months to the first 25 brands that sign up. And we'll provide a link over email to everyone who joined this webinar afterwards. And Shopping Gives, very proud that they're offering 15% off the annual partnership plans. If you mention Shopify webinar, you can get that discount. And Ronnie, why don't you introduce the four topics of the session today?
Very excited to introduce to you kind of the center of the conversation. And when we had this conversation initially, when we were putting this webinar together, we were looking at it as sustainability and the idea of product only. And in the discovery of this conversation, we backed out a little bit. And at Shopping Gives, we look at it in this kind of framework of these four pillars of social impact that I'm excited to share with you. When we talk about social impact and a 360 approach to it as a brand, we look at it as your team, your customer, your community, and your product. Your team being your frontline advocates and influencers, that it starts with value alignment to mission alignment. And that's what creates an authentic approach in giving back and talking about sustainability and why it's important to you and your customers. Your influencers, your team, those are your frontline employees. Asking them what they care about and why these other areas of sustainability, of giving back, of what they care about is important. It sets the baseline of what your company stands for. Then when we look at that as your customer, it's engaging your customer in that impact, identifying with them who you care about and what they care about, and letting your customer drive the conversation and deciding as a brand. We don't say that it's wrong or right at Shopping Gives to draw a line in the sand. Many brands, especially some legacy brands, don't draw those lines. We, of course, advocate for taking a stance on what you believe in, but by identifying who your customers support and bringing them into that conversation, it draws a more loyal customer base and a more authentic relationship with those customers, enabling you to engage with them. Finally, your community is the ability to engage with the actual nonprofits or engaging individuals in your community who are supporting different causes and bringing them into the conversation as well. That's the next extension out of your customer, is whether it be nonprofits or getting volunteering involved or bringing in individuals to help with sourcing and product and understanding who from other areas in the ecosystem you could bring into your community to help drive more sustainable product or diversity and inclusion in that sourcing, pulling in your community as part of your social impact program. And then finally, your product, which is gonna be really where we center a lot of the discussion on today, is that product can be anything from, again, the sourcing of the materials and who you're working with as agencies or product development, all the way through to the final consumption of that product and how it's made and where it's sourced from and, you know, cruelty, anti-cruelty of animals, and being mindful of how that product comes together. So when we talk about this framework of social impact and how it relates to your brand and store, we look at it through these four pillars, which we're excited to dive into today with our panelists. Thank you, Adam.
Of course. Well, thank you, Ronnie, for getting us started here. So with that, what I'm going to do is moderate the session today with our three panelists. And to start that, I'll ask each one of them to introduce themselves, how they got into sustainability, a little bit about their brand, or in Katie's case, your role at Shopify, and one fun thing about you for the audience. So first, Helene, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hello, thank you for inviting me to this panel. The Extra Smile is a makes kids fashion that is fair to people and kind to our planet. We work with the fair trade workshops in Cambodia and Chile, and we only use organic materials. Before becoming a social entrepreneur 2 years ago, I worked in first for 10 years in advertising agencies in Brussels, where I conducted awareness campaigns on behalf of the European Commission on disability rights, climate change, CSR, etc. And then I Then afterwards, I worked for a big French energy company and was based first in Santiago and then in Thailand. And my role there was making, like helping the company transition from a fossil fuel company to a more renewable company through communications and stakeholder engagement. A fun fact about me, I think, is I met my husband. My husband is Chilean, I'm from Belgium, and we met on a plane. His mom was traveling with him. And a couple of years ago, the New York Times wrote a story about us. And so that's for me.
I love that. That's fascinating. Something that probably wouldn't happen in 2020.
Ah, yeah, no.
Well, Darby, how about you next? Can you introduce yourself? Oh, you're on mute, Darby.
I always forget. Thank you for having me. I'm Darby Scott, and I am a luxury goods designer. I design and manufacture under my own brand, also Darby Scott, a collection of women's handbags, clothing, jewelry, and men's travel bags, attaches, accessories as well. So it's a full line. We went direct to consumer a number of years ago. I had been working with all of the major department stores and retailers in the USA and decided to take some time and transition and moved my business into the direct to consumer model. And that has really brought things sort of online and into a completely different methodology of working, having been a wholesaler to the major department stores. We design and manufacture everything that is made. It's 97% is made in USA. That's a bit about me. I have a long history in the industry. I started out right after college working for Perry Ellis when Perry was alive, and had transitioned through many companies, some names you'll recognize like Aqua Scutum of London. And I even had a brief period of time where I worked with Biedermann Industries with Karl Lagerfeld many years ago. So I have a vast, I would say, range of experience from men's to women's to everything. Coming full circle in my own business really pulls it all together. So that's a little bit about me and about our company.
Well, great. Well, thank you, Darby. And to round out this panel, we have Katie from Shopify. And your role, Katie, on this panel is to zoom out and give us the broader perspective from what you're seeing across merchants and also what's going on within Shopify. So go ahead and introduce yourself as well.
Yeah, totally. So I'm Katie Boothby Kung. I am the Senior Manager of Social Impact at Shopify. I don't want to assume that everyone knows what Shopify is, but we are a commerce platform and we provide online and offline tools for small to enterprise sized businesses. We're so happy to be here and excited to be with some of our app partners as well, which is really awesome. That's making Shopify even better. My role at Shopify, I work with social enterprises specifically, and working through partnerships, education, and platform solutions so that social enterprise can grow and launch their businesses on Shopify, specifically in the space of social impact. So lots of really great things happening in the space. We have our community forum, we're launching courses. So a lot that's going to be coming out kind of in the fall that we can kind of get into in the panel. How I got into sustainability, I guess it wasn't really like a straight path. I went to university for international development and relations, and I thought that a lot of social impact in the world came from government. And so shortly after university, I went and worked for the Canadian government in a number of policy roles there. And it wasn't until I got to Shopify about 4 years ago that I realized, you know, that a lot can be done through the tool and the vehicle of commerce. So we didn't have a social impact team then, but I was kind of part of this covert team that worked together to push leaders to make a team that was the social impact team. So a year ago, we launched it. So I'm super proud to be a part of that team and super proud to be a part of the work that we're doing in our communities all over the world and for our merchants and our partners. A fun fact, I think that the best way to learn is by doing. So I have a side hustle called Copper Root Collective. We sell skincare products and 100% of our profits go towards water projects in Zambia. So it also gives me a great excuse to get out of the Ottawa winters here and go and enjoy the African sun and work with a lot of youth there on development projects. So that's me.
Well, thank you, Katie. And thank you to the whole panelists. So I'll introduce myself as well. Of course, I'm Adam Siegel from Recurate. The reason why this topic is relevant to me is that I've spent the last decade working with the largest retailers, primarily in the US, on sustainable retailing and ethical production. So I've had the chance to visit factories in China and Southeast Asia and elsewhere. I've worked on collaborative groups focused on conflict minerals, worker safety, human rights, and a number of other related issues, as well as environmental considerations. I feel like I have a strong sense for what works, what doesn't, where's the biggest opportunities for retail, and I'm excited to bring some of that to life today. So the first category of questions that we're going to talk about is customers. Now, I'm sure you hear this all the time in different news articles or reports saying that the conscious consumer is coming of age and millennials and Gen Z are looking for more sustainable products. But what's the reality? Is that true or is that not? Maybe Darby, I'll turn that over to you first. Give us a sense of what you're hearing from your customers as it relates to their interest in sustainability and social impact.
Thank you. I think it's a two-way street. For us, it's also a conscionable brand. And that is being thinking about contributory consumption as part of our model and our methodology. And that is that there's a book by Simon Mainwaring. It's called We First, as opposed to Me First. And it really speaks to what we're trying to do at Darby Scott, and that is that through, in this whole new age of, you know, changing the way we think about consumption, his thought is that every transaction can include some kind of contribution towards the world or towards the greater good or your community. And that's really important to us. Many years ago when I started my business, I would be approached by various charitable organizations when I was working through Neiman Marcus or Bergdorf Goodman, and I would be invited to contribute a product for an auction. And this was something that was a one-off. And it happened once a year at the annual gala. And what I love about being online and working with Ronnie, and Shopping Gives is that that's something that has become a sustained giving campaign, where it's something that is part of our everyday business. Every transaction is something that gives to a cause, which is so meaningful to me and to us, because I love that Margaret Mead quote where she says, never doubt that, you know, a small, thoughtful group of committed citizens can, you know, change the world. And I think that's true. And I think it's really exciting to be able to cut through all the red tape and manage the regulations and the rules and all of the things that you need to manage being done by a platform on through Shopping Gives on Shopify, so that you don't have to run afoul of, you know, tax laws or any of those things. So, you know, it really becomes, it's part of our team's effort. But what I also love is it's not my choice. Suddenly you have this cornucopia of opportunities to say to your customer, here, you know, you tell us what organization is important to you, what speaks to your heart in terms of your cause, and we'll make that contribution. There's nothing comes out of your pocket through this purchase, but you get to choose, as opposed to us saying, you know, this is our pet or favorite charity. So I also love that there's that reciprocity, but also that the customer really feels that they have a choice and a say. So that's why I think it's really.
Have you found, or maybe said differently, can you provide us with just a couple of representative quotes or feedback that you've heard from customers with regard to your social impact programs? Is there something that pops out to you that's representative of how they're feeling about what you're doing?
Specifically, no, I don't have a direct quote, but I do know that we're now being able to re-engage with some of those charitable organizations, and we are now trying to work more directly with them, as opposed to saying, so I worked with the, say, New Jersey chapter of Susan Komen for the tri-state area in New York. We are now communicating with some of the same people who we had donated product to, but looking to try to create something that becomes, again, what we're talking about, a sustained program in partnering with them. So it's going back to those relationships. And many of my customers actually became customers because they came to know the brand, because we were one of the featured auction items at those events. So it's a bit of getting the customer back to us, because we're now online as opposed to in retail, and then also working and going back to those charities and offering to develop or create something exclusive that could be an exclusive donating item to that particular charity.
Great. Well, Helene, how about to you? As you interact with your customers, what are they saying about the business that you've created, which is built on ethical production and ethical clothing?
Yeah. So sustainability is really at the center of our company's DNA. Our customers love our brand. We receive a lot of praise for our purpose. But what we see is that it takes a lot of time for customers to actually add sustainability criteria into their purchase decisions. So yes, people are very aware, like movies like The True Cost have opened their eyes. Now there's a series on BBC Four about Misguided, which is getting a lot of backlash from public opinion. And there it, so people say, yes, I want to vote with my wallet, but there's still this intention gap. But we see, we see that over time, they do make a purchase. And then the feedback we then receive is they give us a lot of positive feedback about the quality of the product. It was as if they were thinking, because it's eco-friendly and because it was made in Dignity, that it was going to look substandard. And so they come to us because of our sustainability promise, but then they are so surprised that what they get in for their money is of such high quality. Mm-hmm. And
That's great. So what you're saying is that your sustainability and ethical programs are creating a positive association in their minds, and when they get the product, they interpret it to be even higher quality because they know what you've put into it. Mm-hmm. I think about it in terms of restaurants and food experiences, where I tend to, you know, given who I am and what I care about, I tend to find restaurants that are more sustainably minded. And I find it's just better food. And I assume that's because the chefs just care more. They care more about where the product, where the ingredients come from, and they care more about how they produce the food that you eat. And so it's more sustainable and it's just better. It looked like Darby, you were about to jump in with a thought about the quality of products as well.
Well, yes. I mean, you're both speaking my language, and that's, for us, it's always the mantra that, you know, buy something good and have it a long time. Or my Instagram handle underneath says, you know, things of quality have no fear of time. For us, it isn't about more. It's about something beautifully made that hopefully will last a lifetime and perhaps several other lifetimes. We love the idea of generational passing on. There doesn't have to be a luxury good, you know, sort of, you know, black cloud over a luxury good item. If it is produced responsibly with concern about the materials, we honor every material we use. We respect it in the old Indian way, in the sense that, you know, this isn't something that is done frivolously. It's meant to be a beautiful item. And it is like the slow food movement. For the way you talk about restauranting, for us, it's the slow product movement. And I think we're, I think what's exciting about Shopify is that there's some of that is coming back to the way the world is looking for these beautifully curated shops where people are independent indie brands really trying to produce something that is unique and not just the ubiquitous that's been pumped and dumped into the market and then ends up in a landfill. That's the one thing that, you know, we really, you know, want people to move away from.
I think that's a great point, because with the internet today and platforms like Shopify, small and mid-sized brands can have a presence just as big as the mass retailers and mass producers of the past. And the great thing about these small and mid-sized brands is that they do have a strong set of values and can produce high quality, long-lasting items, which of course is just more sustainable. So Katie, you've been very patient with us. I'd be interested in your broader perspective on what you're seeing with regard to the conscious consumer, you know, the socially and environmentally aware consumer, and how stores are responding to that, Shopify stores, and how Shopify itself is responding.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, merchants like Helene and Darby, definitely have talked to a number of them, and they are seeing a shift in their buyer behavior. A lot more people are looking to vote with their dollar, which has been really great to see. I think during this pandemic, just even speaking to my friends that don't work at Shopify, that, you know, we were all in lockdown. A lot of people around the world feeling helpless, but still needing to buy things online. And so by finding brands that they really could buy into their mission, and whether they're donating to, maybe it was a local cause or they're helping frontline workers, you saw a lot of that with brands kind of shifting some of their giving to these local causes. And, you know, buyers were coming because it was their way of giving back to their communities during that time when they really couldn't do anything else. And so, yeah, I think it's a really, really amazing to also see more brands, you know, picking that up, you know, brands that never had giving in their business plan. That's another trend that we're seeing. And I'm sure Shopping Gives has seen maybe more downloads during the pandemic, because there have been a number of brands that want to donate percentage to their local food bank, or, you know, another local charity that was helping during the pandemic. Or, I mean, just thinking about 2020 and all the things that have happened with charities that need help during this time, there's definitely been a lot more brands shifting their focus. And for me, I guess my call to action is, like, if you have been one of these brands that has decided to take up giving during this time, just imagine what your local food bank, the impact you'd have on your local food bank if you didn't just give during a pandemic. What if you were to make that part of your model forever and always and think of the impact that you'd have on your local community. And I think that's kind of the path forward. It's like we are seeing shifts in behavior, definitely in buyer behavior, but it would be nice to also see a shift in the direction of more permanent giving models with brands around the world. So yeah, I mean, on the flip side, I have heard, you know, there's almost a gap where we say that we want to buy things that are better for the planet, and then it's not translating all the time into buying behavior. And speaking with one of our other partners, Green Story, you know, they're seeing, you know, that gap being filled really well by storytelling and doing really intentional storytelling. And I think there's a lot of brands that just assume that people come to their page, they read a couple sentences about their sustainability, and they're like, that's enough. But it's not enough. You need to be telling that story all the time to your customer, whether it's on your social media pages, on your web page, even like right on your product pages. Like, you're getting right down the funnel. What does this product, what impact does it have on the world? And so making those changes in your business is definitely seeing a lot of higher conversion rates for those intentional buyers.
I love that. That makes a lot of sense. And maybe to broaden the message, sustainability and social impact is no different than any other product benefit, and how customers think about benefits of the products they buy is with themselves and their family first. So how does it impact myself and how does it impact my family? A question came in that's very relevant to this and I really love from Ramona. She says that customers come to her store and they say they love the sustainability messaging, but they don't purchase. Then when they ultimately do, they're stunned by how long it lasts or how well the prints wash. So the question is, do you have any recommendations for how to overcome the initial hesitation to purchase these items? My answer first, and then I'd love to turn it over to Helene and Darby, is marketing 101. You know, what make it relevant to them? What about the sustainability of your products is relevant to them immediately and today? So if we're talking about clothing, it could be the toxic material or chemicals that are needed to produce the product or that are residues in the fabric itself. Or something like that. So Helene, I see you're off mute, so I'll let you go first and try to answer that question about overcoming consumers' initial hesitation.
Yes, we also have lots of customers who come and say how great it is and how lovely our products are, and it doesn't always convert. I think one thing is being patient, because we see that some people have signed up to our mailing list in May 2019 and they made their first purchase this week. However, yeah, we are also trying to find a way to accelerate this intention timeline. I think it's Katie said, repeating it all the time, putting messages everywhere, like vote with your wallet. Do you want your kid, kids fashion brand, do you want your kids' clothing to be made by another kid, or do you want to pay a fair price? And then also, like, reiterating the benefits all the time. Like, there's so many harmful chemicals that are found in clothing and that is then later found in blood samples of adults, children, everywhere. So being patient, but also like saying it all over again, because the message to us, our sustainability and our the benefits of our products are clear to us, the owners of the stores, but the potential customers, they pass so many stores, they get so many messages from so many different, and it's being top of mind. Also, for example, I've just purchased a present for my father's wife that I discovered in January. So,
the takeaway, if I understand right, for you is sustainability or social impact can be so broad. So you have to define specifically what you stand for and then communicate that to your customers. Darby, is there anything that you would want to add about overcoming the initial hesitation to purchase these products, even if consumers do care about sustainability?
Absolutely. I there's a couple things, and I think it is hard for it's hard for me to articulate it, but I'm going to say it. And that is, it is a longer funnel. It's a longer time period for that customer. When you are making something that is sustainable, it costs more to produce because you're paying fair wages. You are using more natural materials. You are, you know, we're trying to reduce our, you know, we make domestically, we produce locally, we work with factories that we have long-standing relationships with so that we're sure that there's no, detrimental environmental or working problems. We want to make sure that that all works on our end. Communicating that to our customer, it does take longer. But like she said about the product, the customer who posed the question, once the customer knows, then maybe it's reaching out to that customer and asking them for a comment or a quote that you can put on your site. Because we've had customers say, I could not believe the quality of the material in the dress. Not only did the dress have a high quality material, but it was fully lined, or it came with a slip. You know, those are things that don't happen in other companies. And she came back and bought a second one. But we know, but we monitor sometimes where our customers' traffic through our analytics, and we can see that it might take them 4, 5, 6 visits. So if you are selling a higher quality product, it is going to happen slower. But once you get that customer, you're going to have, likely you're going to have a repeat customer is what I really believe. It's what happens with us.
I love the
unicorn businesses, you know, I call them unicorns because they peak and they peter out just as fast because they literally are shaped like a unicorn horn. If you are growing a sustainable business, it's going to take you a lot longer and you have to be a lot more patient to climb that mountain. And to, you know, to keep climbing that mountain. And it means, you know, finding different ways and different touch points. But it isn't something that's, you know, one and you're done. It's the hot item. And that's why we're in the business. We're not looking for the hot selling item that, you know, blows out and then peters out. And I've seen it in all ends of the businesses that we're in, whether it be clothing or jewelry. Those are things that fashion favors for the moment, but it ends up in the landfill because everybody tires of it.
Well, what I hear from you is a further reiteration of what Helene was saying, which sounds to me like it's about patience. And maybe the reason why patience is so important is because you have a much more textured story to tell than a traditional brand. Traditional brands have a product that looks good and might be fashionable for the moment and people buy it for that reason, but really nothing more. There's not a whole big story to tell. But with Helene and Darby, with the both of your businesses, it's a much more in-depth story and it takes longer for the customer to fully understand it. And, you know, they're not all immersed in this as much as we would like them to be. And so sometimes a customer will first engage with your brand in 2019 and only buy a year or two later. So those are really, really great points. So I want to move on now. The three other categories that we want to get into on this webinar are products, team, and community. And we've already touched on some of them. With products, I actually want to dive as deep as we can and learn some specific takeaways or learnings from all of you about how we can think about designing and producing our products in a more sustainable way. But Katie, I'm actually going to ask you to go first. What are you seeing in terms of Shopify stores doing more to reduce the impacts of producing products that they're selling? So that can be, you know, raw materials, the production processes themselves, end of life, you know, thinking about the full life cycle of a product.
Yeah. I don't know if I can narrow it down to one specific thing. I mean, there's so many things that we touch on that, I mean, certainly, you know, the production is definitely big, looking for alternatives in terms of, you know, fair wages, fair labor practices. In the fashion space, certainly, you know, sustainable fibers is very hot right now. In the beauty industry, it's this whole clean beauty movement. And so that's been very hot. Also packaging, people are really interested in how their gifts are arriving or their orders are arriving, but also once they take it out of the box, what does that packaging look like? I mean, some of these industries have been traditionally very packaging heavy, and consumers don't want that anymore. They're opening it up and they're finding all this plastic and they're saying, why have you sent me all this plastic for one little t-shirt? And so that's why we're seeing, you know, companies like No Issue and now it's escaping me, the other one based out of Australia, the compost mailers for your t-shirts and things like that. That's definitely on trend in terms of running an e-commerce business. I mean, there's a lots of businesses thinking about a lot of things along the entire production journey. I think what's interesting is, you know, really focusing in on that first stage of production. And so how can you reduce emissions at that first stage, but how can you also be designing what you're selling for end of life? And I don't think that is what a lot of companies are thinking about. And so while, you know, they're creating things that are made with sustainable fibers and fair labor, and what have you, maybe it comes in glass packaging, etc. There isn't really a plan once you're done with it. And so I think that's why something like Recurate is amazing. I think that's a great solution for end of life, is to give it a second life. I think that's amazing. But yeah, I think thinking about, you know, where is this product going to end up? And I mean, the companies here on this panel are obviously thinking about that, but I would just love to see more companies, you know, I call it sustainability by design. And it's similar to kind of that GDPR privacy by design that every lawyer like went through a couple years ago. It's like, how can we design practices that have privacy baked in? We don't even have to think about it because we know it's there.
I like that.
Sustainability.
So that's a great segue. So Darby, I'm going to turn it over to you, and I'd love to get into the mind of the designer and producer and hear how you think about designing products before they're ever produced, before you ever choose the material. How do you think about designing products so that it can be sustainable through its life?
So I grew up making my own clothing. And I did it from the time I was 5 years old. And I understand literally how to manufacture things, but I also knew from an early age the time and effort and energy put into producing a product. I wanted it to last. And I have, from that time on, always been conscious about choosing a fabric that I knew was going to last a great length of time, something that was easy care too as well. In terms of conscientious design, I even think about how easy is this fabric to care for after it's been laundered. Can you home launder it? And can you hand press it yourself if you had to? Are there materials we can use that you would have to dry clean fewer times? Or, so all of that, because you know, I want my clothing after I've worn it, laundered it, to look as good as it was the first time I wore it. And we all know we've purchased product and been very deeply disappointed about the quality of it post laundering. And that's something that, you know, we take to heart. We test our materials, we test our products, we test the wearability, we test how easy it is to care for. And that's important to me. And again, you know, we're talking about everything from the sourcing of the materials, trying to source consciously and locally, looking at companies that are using the right kinds of dyes and the right kinds of treatments on the fabric that aren't things that are polluting the waterways or polluting our lands. And, you know, if we're working in natural products and somebody, hopefully Darby Scott lasts several generations, and then they go to recreate and they sell it and it goes to somebody else. But if not, I hope that what I produce is something that would biodegrade and naturally sort of re-find its way back into the earth without being, you know, some, you know, chemical or something nasty to harm our environment.
It's an amazing design principle, and it sounds like that is the foundation or the bedrock for all of the products you produce. Do no harm, high quality so that they last forever. But if people choose to dispose of that product, that it does no harm in the disposal. So Helene, I'm sure you have a perspective on this, designing your own children's wear in a sustainable way. So I'd love to hear your perspective too.
I'd like to start with the statement that fashion is out of fashion. Clothing is not something like vegetables. They don't go off. So, we've been brainwashed. First it was... it was okay. Like every year there was a new new colors and it was kind. But now fast fashion has been working so hard to make us think that what we bought last week is already out of fashion this week. So when we design our products, we start with the idea that fashion is out of fashion. So we do not play on very short-term trends. The designs that we make for our kids' fashion are rather timeless. They could last at least for 10 years. So they're timeless with a twist, so they're not boring. Our clothing is far from boring. And then also when we choose the materials. We also only work with the organic materials. The only thing that we haven't found yet is a sewing thread. It's we use a recycled polyester for that. So that's the only thing that is not biodegradable in our clothing. We use wooden buttons, etc. And then the suppliers, the workshops, we go through an audit, we visit them, we speak to the employees, we are in regular contact with the people making our, we know who's making our clothes in the team, in the workshop. We request certificates, so that's how we design our products. And then kids grow out of their clothes very fast. So we've just launched the pre-loved section on our website. So people, when they've bought a garment, and also sometimes kids, for some reason, do not want to wear the clothing that you bought for them. So instead of that going to waste, people can resell, thanks to Recurate, their items on our website. And then, so we keep a longer lifeline for our products.
Well, thank you. You're doing my bidding for me. And I'll say that I have a 3-month-old baby boy, and I'm very excited to give him the extra smile clothing when he's the right age for it, because you're right, your items are beautiful and they're timeless. So the next topic that we wanted to touch on is team. Each of you work in different types of teams, different size teams, different level of entrepreneurialism. But the thought is that having a sustainability or impact program brings your team closer together. You know, it's a team that shares common values, a common mission, and it makes it stronger than if it was just about selling more product. So Katie, again, maybe I'll turn it over to you first. Tell me, what is the Shopify team? That's the biggest one represented on this call. What's the Shopify team think about when you talk about social impact?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it goes without saying, everyone's very proud of the work that we've done so far. They're really proud of the sustainability fund. And it's really amazing to work for a CEO that truly deeply cares about this. And wants to push it forward throughout the company on all product and service lines. So that's been really amazing to see. And I mean, in terms of like what we've done outside of like our team's work is that we've always pushed for act as an owner at Shopify. And so not only do we have, you know, a bit more formalized work that we're doing on our team and through the consultation of our team with others, is that our team does encourage folks to go out into the community on their own, to volunteer, and to be present within the communities that are important to them. So when it comes to getting volunteers for some of our programs, or having people come to us and just say, hey, do you think that we can switch out a team dinner and go like bag food at the food bank or something? I was like, yeah, totally. Like, go do that. And every team should go do that. So it's certainly been amazing to see. And I mean, on the product and platform side, people have always been very keen to help our team, you know, working out, whether it's working off the side of their desk or getting a bit of permission from their lead to help us with some of their products. And I mean, thinking of like the Offset app, that actually started as a Hack Days project. Like, everyone's very keen about this. And there was a bunch of really eager beavers that, you know, wanted to make an app, and they did, and they did it within 2 Hack Days, and now it's live in the App Store. So this is something that a lot of Shopify folk really, really, truly care about. So that's been really encouraging, especially for our team, because, you know, we know that the work we're doing is really valued by the rest of our teams. And for other companies that have sustainability baked in, I'm sure the other, like, Helene and Darby have seen this as well within their companies, is having a mission like this that people really buy into also helps, you know, with employee retention. People are really proud of the company that they work for, and they're really proud of the work that their company is doing. And it's also really fulfilling to know that you can go to work and you can build things, but then you can also, you know, you're encouraged to volunteer with certain programs. You're encouraged to, you know, help out in your community. And so I think that that definitely helps with employee retention if anyone is looking to kind of ingrain sustainability and social impact within their missions.
Well, and thank you for that. So given the time, I'll just see Helene and Darby, is there anything in particular that you want to add from your own perspective, your own team's perspective, about how your sustainability or impact or giving programs have brought you closer together?
Well, in our case, our team is very, very, very small, but I'm about to hire our first employee next month, and I've received lots of applications, and every applicant says that they really would like to work for a company that is tackling this problem of the fashion industry being the second or the third biggest polluter in the world. So it's quite promising.
So to say it differently, tons of people want to work for companies that care.
Exactly. Yeah.
Excellent. So the final topic was on community, and we've already touched on community to a degree, but maybe just to broaden the conversation now, how have your efforts, or how do you think about how your efforts impact the broader community? Darby, you talked about this to a degree at the beginning of the conversation, but I'd be interested in having you elaborate more on your community impacts.
I think I might have to punt on this one. I mean, we're a very small organization, and I think for us, we think about community on several different levels. It's community and team for us are sort of one and the same, in that, you know, we have internal goals and we have external goals. And we're looking to create long-lasting partnerships with, you know, even with the organizations that are helping us obtain the goals that we're trying to reach, like Shopping Gives, or looking at circularity and bringing back a customer who may have an older Darby Scott who may want to resell that Darby Scott, and thinking about doing that on our platform as opposed to having that go through a third party. Because more often than not, we like to have our customer service people convince the person that maybe they need to have us look at it and have us refurbish the bag or do a repair on that bag. And ironically, in some cases, what might seem counterintuitive is ultimately very helpful in bringing that customer back to make another purchase. Because if they feel that we're willing to work with them, and so that's also part of our message. Our team is so enthusiastic when they feel that they've gotten a customer to understand, like, no, don't throw that away. Let us look at it. Let us repair it. Let us refurbish it. Let us do what we can do to keep that as part of your wardrobe in your closet. So for us, we come together as a team and constantly discuss this internally, but externally. We partner with our factories to share the responsibility of those repairs. And as a team, we come up with ways to think about what's that hurdle that we can get through. And it goes to everything from, we like to have a no-waste production cycle so that my production manager will analyze the consumption on fabric or leather goods or whatever it is that we use and analyze what we can do with the balance of that, so that if we've made bags, we know how many small items we can make, be it a keychain or a wallet. Those are things that nothing goes to waste. The factory knows to never throw anything away. We find ways of repurposing it. If it isn't the highest quality, it's something that might be something that we can donate to somebody else in need. So the whole teamwork and community is something that I think we think about daily. To help our community, to help the world, while we're doing what we like to do, which is making beautiful things.
It sounds to me like for you, when you think about the impact you can make on community, you start with where you have the most control, and that's your team, your factories, your product, and your customers. And I love that, because that is where you have the most opportunity, because you can control.
But getting your factories on board to think alike and to be like-minded about their waste or the materials, or thinking even about the shipments and what materials they use when they ship and everything. We've gotten factories to think about the environment more than they may have in the past, because they're just caught up in the day-to-day. And that's because, you know, like Helene, we're in the factory, we're doing the inspections, we're doing the visits. But rather than it be an antagonistic relationship, it becomes a cooperative relationship where we try to assist them in managing those issues that are important to us so that it doesn't become, you should have done this, which was wrong. It's, we'll help you do this, which will help the environment.
That's great. Well, there is so much to talk about on this subject, and an hour can never do justice to the breadth of the conversation that we can have. So I feel like this was an introduction to the topic from three leading experts. So Helene, Darby, and Katie, thank you so much for joining us today. And Ronnie, thank you for your partnership in putting this together. And what we'll do afterwards is send an email out to everyone with a link to the recording so you can view it afterwards. But I think more importantly, we're here. If anyone has any questions or anyone wants to dive into their own programs and wants to find ways to improve, we'd love to partner and work with you to do that. So with that, any final words? All right. Well, thank you again so much. Have a great afternoon. Take care, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening in on this episode of the Impact Exchange, where we discussed sustainability across all aspects of retail brands and how to navigate authentic impact across your team, product, customer, and community. This was a unique opportunity to share a fantastic webinar with some incredible thought leaders. Thank you, as always, for subscribing. You can always learn more by going to Medium/The Impact Exchange to review a full recap of this episode and subscribe. Don't forget to click below, subscribe across iTunes, Spotify, and everywhere else you listen to your podcast. I am Ronnie Sage, your host of The Impact Exchange. Thank you so much for subscribing. Have a wonderful day wherever you are.